You're listening easy to smooth sailing with your captain, Jason Scanberg, only on WJEV Radio, Milwaukee's finest classic country music, with special guest.
On WJEV Radio 101.1 FM. It's a beautiful, dark, and gloomy night out in Milwaukee. It had just snowed this morning. The snow is now done, and we don't have that horrible, horrible rain that we had yesterday that killed 50 people I saw in Kentucky. So glad that is gone and that we didn't get hit too well. Well, this week on Smooth Sailing, we have Mr. Asher himself, a freshman senator and part of the class of 2025. Asher, are you there?
I am. I'm prepared to talk on the radio as I've prepared for my entire high school career.
Have you done any radio talk shows prior to this?
I competed in an event called Radio Speaking on the speech team, but it was mainly just reciting news and weather and commercials about radio flyer wagons and copyright companies, I think. Yeah, good times.
So the speech team, is that like a common thing for speech teams to have a radio personality competition, essentially?
Yeah, I definitely competed in being a radio personality. That was 4 years of my life.
That sounds very interesting. I didn't know that was a thing. What happens on a speech team? I know they're fairly common, but I've never actually been on one or seen one perform.
Well, the best summation I can give is, it's as if all the debate team kids and the theater kids decided that it wasn't worth establishing two separate clubs and rather decided to create compromises of everything they liked to do. So you get sort of weird in-between children, like radio speaking, where there's a lot of just regular acting events or informational speeches.
I see.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you also told me about yourself prior to coming onto this show was you are a badminton connoisseur?
One might say.
Is that true?
Yes. Part of my efforts here at MSOE have been starting the badminton intramural, which did not exist before I showed up, and now it does.
How many people are on our badminton team?
Well, the numbers aren't exactly conclusive in terms of, because we have teams, but some are two, some are three, but I can give you a base number of at least 56 involved parties. Probably a better estimate would be somewhere around 65, 70, because some teams have three members.
And how long have you yourself been playing badminton?
Oh, well, I just liked it in high school a whole bunch, honestly. I really loved the days in gym where we'd be able to come in and you'd see the net set up and you'd grab your rackets and just mess around with your friends. Like, see if you can play with two rackets or play sitting down. We had the no gods, no masters rule set, which was very interesting when it came down to the only two rules being don't hurt anyone and don't break any equipment. But I just started the intramural because I wanted to have a chance to have that environment again.
And what are the normal rules of badminton?
Well, as much as I'm sure that would be a riveting topic to hear over a radio show, it's essentially, I'll sum it up for you real fast. Just we play doubles, two players on each team. Just hit the ball, hit the birdie back and forth, make sure it lands on the other guy's side, and then play to 21, rinse and repeat for the best two out of three.
So, when you employ a no gods, no masters rule
yes.
set, does that mean that you can also jump across the net to the other side of the court and such?
To be fair, the no gods, no masters rule set was never really nailed down as a rule set, seeing as there are no gods and no masters and no gods, no masters. I've never seen anyone try and jump the net, but we have had people switch sides through walking around.
Do you have any particularly memorable stories from your time playing badminton that you'd want to share to get people interested in the activity?
Yes, I would love to. So one time I was playing with a good friend of mine in high school. We still talk occasionally. And a birdie was coming across to our side of the net. Neither of us, I was not in the position to hit it, and neither was he. So he, in a brilliant stroke of luck, threw his racket across the court to the point where it landed on the floor and actually bounced the birdie off of it, which was alarming because that's not allowed in regulation play, but that's the wonders of no gods, no masters. And at the badminton intramural, after you finish your scheduled games, you are free to practice no gods, no masters as you wish and have these wonderful, wonderful moments that you will remember for your entire life.
A viewer just commented that he believes that badminton is pretty much, quote, funky tennis. How does this make you feel, and how would you address that comment?
Well, I would say that there's definitely some similarities in terms of it being racket sports, but I would say that tennis is funky badminton, honestly. So, treat that as you will. One is clearly superior.
And the biggest difference being, of course, the birdie, right?
Birdie versus the ball, the court size. Badminton's normally played on a much smaller court than tennis, where you can basically get from one side of the other to the other pretty easily. It's not the big outside tennis court size. Think more along the lines of you. If you've ever seen like the circle in the center of a gymnasium. Think about that diameter is the court length.
And how did badminton come to be? Did it originate because of that smaller scale as compared to tennis, or is there a different story behind it?
To be fair, I'm not an expert in the history of badminton. I merely like to play it. But if I had to choose one particular sort of theory, I would imagine that people were playing tennis and got tired of running back and forth and thought, hey, what if I could just stand in one small rectangle instead of having to do all of this cardiovascular exercise, and I could play it with my friends in an indoor environment where I can take up less space. Even though traditionally I believe it is played outdoors as well.
And if anyone here is interested in playing badminton, especially now that the weather has gotten bad, where do you host this intramural activity that you started?
So we host intramurals in the Kern on Sundays, primarily from about 5 to 8. You had to sign up for a league earlier during Thanksgiving break. So personal interest in terms of coming to play in the league, not really a possibility. But I was able to actively expand our badminton materials. I believe I wrote a fun 8-page PDF that approved like $200 worth of funding. So if you want to rent out part of the Kern and just spend some time playing badminton with your friends, that's definitely a possibility these days because we do have the materials for it.
And who did you get your funding through?
Why, who else than the wonderful, talented, and beautiful Alexa Deegan?
And I'm guessing you also had to go through Alexa Deegan to establish the org, right?
Yes.
What does establishing an org on a college campus look like? What does that process begin with, and how does it really shape up?
Well, to be fair, I was working more on creating an intramural, which is I'd say an easier process than creating an org. Creating an org is a lot of different steps here at MSOE. I've yet to do so. I've just worked within the structures of orgs. But I can speak to creating an intramural. I think there was just a vacuum, honestly, and someone needed to put in the work. But essentially what I did was I created an interest form. By which I began to gather digital signatures. I'm sure some of you saw the sort of badminton interest form posters around campus. They were posted on different floors of the various residence halls. I'm sure the CC had a few. And then I began to get a much larger amount of signatures on those than I initially anticipated. I believe we ended somewhere just above 90, actually, which was kind of shocking for me. But once I had shown that there was adequate interest, I took that information to Alexa Deegan. I said, Alexa Deegan, we have people who want to play badminton. And she said, okay, go and organize the badminton intramural. So I went down to the Kern Center to check what badminton materials they had. And they sort of just looked at me and I said, hello there, my name is Asher Sprigler. I am running the badminton intramural. And they just sort of let me into the field house where I looked at all the materials, accidentally stabbed myself with a badminton racket. That was a delightful experience. And then, you know, wrote up an 8-page PDF on what we had and what we needed. And essentially that was all it took.
You know, before I go back up some of the other things you said during that, I just want to say, if I had 2 nickels for every time I knew a person who injured themselves with a racket, I would have 2 nickels, but it's weird it's happened twice in my life.
Okay.
Specifically being stabbed with one.
Well, yeah, it wasn't a pleasant experience, Jackson. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, I know. My dad also was stabbed with a racket, and it went straight to the bone when he was in college. He was playing tennis.
Okay, I mean, that's a lot more serious than it was for me. So, I was lucky / unlucky enough to...
Sorry, we got a viewer asking, how did I get stabbed with a badminton racket? Again,
how did you get stabbed with a badminton racket, Jake?
I did not get stabbed. I wanted to clarify, it was my dad who went straight to the bone when he was a student. It was a tennis racket. I have never been stabbed with a badminton racket. I imagine it's harder to get stabbed with a badminton racket, which makes me ask, how exactly did you manage to do it?
So I was digging through the ruins of, I suppose, the old badminton intramural, though I never really found any records. We have a sizable amount of badminton equipment just on campus. We had enough to play three games at once, which I guess just comes with the fact that we have holes in which to mount the poles and the nets. But really, I was just sorting through the materials, and I bent down to grab something that had dropped onto the floor, and I felt something poking into my arm, which was alarming, because it was quite painful, but it was less painful than it could have been because I was wearing my leather jacket. But one might assume that it was not kind to my leather jacket, and that person would be right. It tore a little bit of a hole in it, and for those who want the fun little Easter egg of seeing me walk around campus, I'm almost always wearing my jacket. Mm-hmm. You'll notice that on the right arm there is a piece of black electrical tape that reflects differently, and that piece of black electrical tape is where I've patched the badminton racket stab wound.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I have seen the electrical tape and wondered, what is that? So now it makes sense.
Yes, it's very much like leather armor in terms of what it saved me from, because it would have torn a much bigger gash in my arm if not for, you know, the leather.
I mean, there's a reason why leathers are so important, especially when you're doing, like, cycling sports and everyone's wearing leathers on top of pads and stuff, but I mean, leather is a good protective material. People don't give it enough credit.
But essentially, what I tore myself on was a badminton racket that someone had snapped the head off of, and it was just a sharp rod that was sticking straight up.
Years prior, I'm assuming, since there are no records of the... Wow.
I'm telling you, I was, like, digging through ancient ruins here. Like, these were pre-MSOE historical badminton supplies that I was trying to salvage for my new era.
So, what are the rackets made out of? What, like, did you get stabbed with metal, or was it, like, just really sharp plastic? Like, what exactly was it?
The current rackets, I believe, are steel. Which is not optimal for a badminton racket, but we consider price. Right now. If you are listening to this and you are considering going out to buy a badminton racket, do not choose steel or aluminum. There are plenty of carbon fiber models and other various materials that are much lighter. Or, you know, if you want to go for something heavier, there are other options. If you want to play with wood, I can't stop you. If you want to play with a wood racket, I wouldn't recommend it. But, you know, play with a wood racket. Live your life.
So, follow-up question. After you got stabbed by the steel, did you check to make sure you didn't have tetanus, just to be safe?
You know, Jackson, I feel like I would have noticed by now. Since I got stabbed, what was it, halfway through first quarter, and now we're on the soon-to-be third week, and I feel absolutely fantastic.
Well, that's great news. So, when you first were getting your signatures, you mentioned that you were surprised you had so many people show interest. Why was that?
Well, the thing is that I at that point, I was just a freshman showing up. It was week one that I started making the posters.
Right.
I was just a freshman who showed up to MSOE, and I said to myself, hey, I want badminton. And so I went about it, and then I started making this Microsoft form to track it all, and it just went up and up and up. I talked to Alexa Deacon. She's like, we just need 40, and 40 sounds good. And within, like, the first week, we had 40. And that was way faster than I ever assumed anything worth doing would be in life. Because it was just, we got them all, it's time to kick back, relax, and, you know, wait for them to flood in and campus life to tell us what to do. But I really think that it's a show of how many people here on campus are willing to get involved in something, which was surprising to me because of the incredible rigor of the academics, that there were people who were willing to extend time outside of their course load during the winter quarter, nonetheless, mm-hmm. to play badminton.
I was just about to ask that. So as an intramural sport, specifically an indoor one, do you only run during the winter quarter?
Yes, we are only a official winter quarter intramural. Now, I will say something here on the radio, so you could tape me on it. I deeply wish that someday we can transition the intramural into at least a club sport, which is absolutely doable. Colleges have club badminton teams. It's just a matter of running the intramural long enough to get people interested and then finding financial options in terms of funding the club sport.
Which you may be able to do from other campus sources besides Alexa Deacon, correct?
Yes.
Off-campus sponsors?
We'd have to look for sponsors or collect team fees as common with club sports.
How hard is it to transition into club sport? I imagine you've slightly looked into this, if this is something you're interested in doing in the future.
Yes. From what I discussed with Alexa, I would say that the finances were one of the main stopping points, because if you're a club sport, you got to look professional, you got to have your outfits in terms of like uniforms of a shirt, shorts, you got to pay for transportation, you got to pay to go to invitationals, you got to find sponsors, you got to find faculty, or I'd assume a member of the Kern Center would have to assist us. And that's a lot of overhead, and that's a lot of overhead that can be done by someone who doesn't really have to be the best at badminton. When it comes down to it, making a club sport is not really about being good at the sport, it's just about being good at paperwork, which is, I think, is something that I can do.
And you certainly have the ability to get more funding from student government as well, right? Or is that not at all covered by what a intramural sport would draw from for their funding?
I'd assume we'd have to look elsewhere, because student government, if I'm familiar with my role, which we can discuss later, we are beginning to shift away from approving funding. So that would now be dealt with by other bodies. So I'd have to go for something like, I think we leave campus life as soon as badminton stops being an intramural and starts being a club sport. We'd basically have to rely on out-of-campus funding in terms of either taking dues from members or finding outside sponsors, which would be incredibly difficult this early in the existence of a club sport.
I see. And what would a club sport reach out to outside of due fees for off-campus sponsors? I mean, I'm part of teams such as NASA Lunar Robotics, and obviously there are people that come to mind like Milwaukee Tool that are engineering companies that would obviously want their name on something related to robotics to look good.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you reach out to in the badminton world to get sponsorship from?
Well, there is a delightful, delightful group of ladies and gents down at the Office of University Advancement. If you've spoken to them, they are very good at making sure that general donor money to the school is adequately distributed to different organizations who require it. I'd most likely have to ask them, pretty please, that they could try and get one of their normal donors to tack on a couple thousand more dollars towards the interest of a badminton team, and hope that one of the regular alumni donors, or just donors to MSOE in general, have an interest in badminton to the point where they'd be willing to give us the funds. I don't think that we could go to a badminton company necessarily at this stage. We'd have to first establish ourselves on base funding, and once we have accomplishments and experience, we could reach out to, I suppose, equipment companies. But really, I'd say we'd rely mainly on dues and the odd portion of a university advancement donation.
And would, in the future, if you become more established, would you ever try and take this org higher than a club sport? Or do you think, you know, that's so far down the line that you'll most likely be gone from MSUE by that point?
I do have concerns with reaching into the level of varsity. Now, they're not traditional concerns as in, like, oh, I'll be gone by then, we won't have time. It's just that I want to make sure that people of every gender have the chance to play badminton. At least where I'm from, Illinois, on the high school level, there is no boys' badminton, which is alarming for people like me who really enjoyed playing badminton, that there was nowhere that we could play in a public school. We'd have to pay thousands of dollars to join a private league, which a lot of people just can't do. If we were to escalate into a varsity team, at the very least, I'd want boys and girls varsity. If it would be a difficult leap, it would be a difficult call for me to make to say just make one gender and hope the second gender comes along. I don't think that I would be able to make that call just because of what I've had so far in my life. I think I'd keep us at club as long as we could.
That's fair. I really respect that. What's the current distribution of gender when it comes to badminton and MSOE right now? I imagine it's men skewed anyways because of just, you know, the gender distribution on campus.
Very true. It is definitely majority male. I'd say it follows about the 70-30. The 70-30 is an interesting 70-30, 80-20 sort of range is an interesting denomination. I've heard all sorts of everything in between, like 73-27 number, for example. But I'd say that the badminton intramural definitely reflects this in its composition.
And why do you think badminton is so much more, I don't know, popular with a female demographic in Illinois? Because at least that's what that implies when you say public schools don't have male badminton teams in most areas.
Yes, it's the IHSA in Illinois regulates high school level sporting. So there is just simply not a category for boys badminton. It doesn't exist. And if I could denote anything to that, I really don't think I'm in the authority to place a solid approximation as to why only girls badminton exists. I would say just perhaps the sport was traditionally female and it stayed that way. But I am not a I would like to say I am not entirely qualified to provide a historical background or reasoning for that.
I mean, that's completely understandable. And we both know that you, if you could change that, you would. But
yes, yeah.
Unfortunately, the IHSA is a bit hard to shift from everything I've heard.
I tried my very best in high school to get onto a badminton team. I tried to get onto the girls' badminton team. They didn't let me. So, you know.
Yeah.
We gotta get what we can, which is why I came here to college and started the intramural, so people can just play badminton in leagues with their friends and have a good time.
Well, we are still on this topic, and we're coming about the 30-minute mark. I just want to ask if anyone has any questions, if they're in the chat or in the call, that they would like to ask Asher about badminton before we move on.
I know. It's don't all come at once now.
And it doesn't seem like it. So, with that being said, we are going to backtrack a little bit and go into student government, because you mentioned very briefly that you had a position in student government. Can you tell us more about what you do and what that position is?
So just this Monday, well, last Monday, I was officially approved by the General Assembly as a freshman senator. So essentially that means that I was approved in terms of like my election as saying, yes, all of this was valid, all of this was valid. Congratulations on your position. You can vote next meeting. So I really haven't gotten to make many policy implementations during my time as a freshman senator because it's been about 6 days and we haven't hit the next meeting yet. But if there's anything I can speak about, it would be a lot of the campaign process, because that's what's taken up a lot of my time as a student government member.
And I also know from what you told me prior to this show, you had a very interesting campaign in that your election was almost, it wasn't even almost, it was completely decided because no one else ran.
Very true. I ran uncontested. It was great. But the thing is about running uncontested, while there is really no election, you still get to go through the experience of getting endorsed. And I'd say that's really what's gotten me the most interaction with actual students here. Because even if there's not like a public election, you still have to get at least 100 signatures from students saying, yes, this is someone that I trust to be my freshman senator. And so I ran a platform off of that. We made posters, but the posters never got put up because we didn't want to shell out the cash for an uncontested election. But my policy was essentially, we are going to make sure that as we expand the campus, the space is allocated in the interest of the students and not just the administration, because as we've seen, there has been a massive push to bring in a larger and larger freshman class every year. Like, I'm sure students around MSOE have seen the tours that are constantly going through Admitted Student Day, and the fact that they're essentially allocating more of the CC space into a welcome center. So a lot of my platform was making sure that as we expand that space, we have the interest in the students' sort of use. So clubs like Mage, for example, who had their rooms taken away, are sort of demanding, and rightfully so, their space back. While I also realize there is a concern in terms of getting actual faculty members and staff offices back using that space, I believe there might be a way that we can get these students their organization spaces back so they have a chance to actively use them. Besides that, my platform was also along the lines of making sure that the students have a way to directly communicate with American Dining Creations, the sort of on-campus food service. And there's been a lot of controversy surrounding that recently. There was the entire sanitation rating going from an A to a B temporarily, as well as different changes to the cafeteria. Everyone who lives in the dorms has a meal plan, so everyone essentially that lives on campus gets a chance to check these things out. It was always a B. Thank you, Mitch. So, okay, Mitch is providing me more information. Mitch, of course, is a master of the food. He was more qualified.
And I don't know if you know this, he was a former senator as well.
I have heard this. He helped me along my campaign trail. He was a delightful assistant.
Mitch himself kind of got fed up with the bureaucracy. I know you haven't been in student government for that long. Have you gotten any sight of that so far?
Well, I think it's a lot of being able to manage conflict within a group, which is an overall important skill in life. So hopefully, before I get fed up with the bureaucracy, I get to learn a little about working on a sort of team. And being able to deal with the bureaucracy and the ranking, and being able to effectively process it, because I feel like that's going to be a really useful life skill as I continue on through my life, into industry, just all throughout my wonderful existence here on the planet Earth.
And when you say continue into industry, do you have any specific industry that you're looking into going in the future?
If I have to name the most specific, I am interested in designing embedded systems that are going to be used to store artificial intelligence, sort of algorithms.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you are a computer science student, correct?
I'm a computer engineer.
Slightly off of the mark there.
Indeed. Don't worry, we're all basically the same thing. Don't tell anyone I said that.
We're in the big umbrella of EECS.
At least our acronym makes more sense than CAICM, so we'll trust that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and as Mitch mentioned, he said he walked into student government expecting to get something done and walked out as the comptroller of MSOE Libertarians.
I mean, yeah, the MSOE Libertarians are quite a force on campus.
They're one of, if not the largest, active political orgs on campus, I would say.
Yes. Well, if nothing else, at least Mitch had an interesting experience. So I look forward to that.
Can you tell us anything specific about the funding that you mentioned earlier? And what I'm saying about the funding is how the process is changing from government handing out money to other people handing out money, because for the long... Oh, we're going to have to go to commercial. One sec. I'm assuming we should probably... Okay.
Given a kit, and you will create a system on a chip device with Patrick Payne in a wonderful 2-hour workshop running from Rome. It is located on the 3rd floor of the Science Building. And if you come, yep, you get your free kit. You get to talk to Patrick Payne. We got leftover goodies from the IEEE meeting. So make sure to get yourself some free time and come on down. We would love to have you. What else? What else? What else? So after winter break, Raider Robotics will be hosting a PCB design workshop. So if you're interested in the systems, even CF, take your pick. We will have a chance for you to learn how to design PCBs with PCAP, a delightful software. We are using a nightly version. 6 is going to be fantastic. Nevertheless, we will allow you to have design that you can make yourself. That's right, send it off to your favorite Chinese manufacturer and get it made up. No ethical concerns required. What else do we have on the advertisements for today? I'll take a look. Next.
I'm back.
601.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You're listening to 101.1 FM.
Generally, when we get commercial, the bot player starts playing music again, but I guess I mistapped when I was operating. So
beautiful.
My bad.
Well, don't worry. I got him some actual advertisements for events on the MSOE campus. It was delightful. I mean, we're not quite done yet. Tomorrow there will be a German holiday market behind the bookstore on the third third floor of the CC. If you want to go ahead, it's part of the Culture Uncovered Month for Germany. It's going to be delightful. There's going to be free stuff. You're going to get bookstore coupons. You're going to learn all about culture. It's going to be delightful. Please be there or be square from the hours of 11 to 3. You can be there and be square, though, if you really want to. I can't stop you.
Will they have the same food they had this Friday at the German Cultural Festival, if you went to that?
I was working. So, I could not tell you.
Oh, can you tell me if they'll have the food again at the market? Because it was wonderful, as I'm sure anyone that went there can attest.
Hey, we can essentially assure that whatever there is going to be wonderful, so it might as well be the food. Come on, guys. Just show
up.
It's going to be great.
I mean, it's a Sunday. What goes on Sundays?
Not much. But when I do say tomorrow, I mean Monday. It will be Monday. It'll be Monday, 11 to 3, behind the bookstore in the CC. Be there. Be square. Enjoy German culture. Okay, are we still on commercial? We might be. Okay, I'm just going to keep going then. So IEEE is going to be hosting after winter break an oscilloscope workshop with the one and only Dr. Holland. Look for that coming out either week 6 or 7 if you are a freshman or sophomore or junior or senior who for some reason doesn't know how to use an oscilloscope. You can learn with the head of the EE department helping you out. Who is better qualified? I can't think of anyone. Other than that... badminton's tomorrow. We talked about that. 5 to 8. Come and cheer on your friends or make new friends and then cheer them on afterwards. Or maybe cheer people on and then make a friend out of the person you've cheered on. That's how you work. That's how you get connections in this life. So Badminton's tomorrow. We got that.
I am very impressed. Very impressed. Your speech skills from high school coming through, great as ever. Maybe
Thank
the
so
best
much.
Advertisements we've had. We have buffers, but they're hard to implement since we don't have any quick way to just. Yeah, we can command a buffer to play. However, it takes a bit because we still have to wait for the delay in the actual radio with the current song that's being played, unless we skip it. So, if you would like to make some buffers for us, I'm sure a lot of us would very much appreciate it here on WJEV Radio 101.1 FM, Milwaukee's finest classic country music.
I would love to.
With that being said, we'll return where we left off to student government funding. So,
okay.
One of the things that you have brought up, and it's your major thing that you're pushing for, is you want orgs not to lose their room or to get the old space back. The problem is the space where the rooms were has now been occupied, and should I say occupied by departments on campus, sorry, not organizations. So paid employees by the campus. So the likelihood of getting that space back is minimal at best. Excuse me. Would you like to explain how you plan to, or how you think you would approach this issue?
So if you were to ask the parliamentarian of student government what the chances were of getting, for example, the Mage Corner back, she would tell you to give up
now.
So essentially what I would say is make sure that you're at least pushing for it so you have the chance to get something. In life, if you're asking for something and then it's not entirely possible, you can at least get the other person to compromise. And that's the best thing that I think we can hope for in this situation, is that as we expand into the new space, we are actively able to at least make sure that we have some sway in its use. While I can't say that we'll have absolute control, I'd say the effort of pushing and getting that sort of assertive behavior out there in the interest of the student body will, in the long run, pay off. Even if it's not the spaces entirely, we'll make sure that we're able to get the student interest involved and, at the very least, make sure that we get something that will help sort of grow the student experience here on the MSOE campus.
And do you think anyone, as a counter argument, would say something along the lines of, well, isn't it the organization's job to do their own advertisement and do their own growing themselves? And how would you respond to that?
I would say that my job as a freshman senator is to be a representative of the student body. When people signed my endorsement form, even if there wasn't an open vote, when people signed my endorsement form, they trusted me to act in their interest. And I think that the best way to fulfill that trust is to act at least sort of in the interest of the orgs, if you will, even if I'm not a direct part of some of the orgs. The students who signed my endorsement forms were, and therefore, in order to best serve them, I am to serve the orgs.
It's a very understandable conclusion you've drawn there, and it's good to have someone like you on the Council of Student Org, speaking for everyone on the student body. Oh, back to commercial.
Okay. So, full disclosure, I used all my commercial stuff last time, but there are probably plenty of
well
lovely
or
things you can
say hi there and
yeah.
Wish you a merry Texas Christmas, you all.
Almost winter break.
Merry
do some holiday shopping for your family.
Christmas, you all.
It's probably a bit late, though.
May your days be
most
sunny.
Online shopping is
May your
almost over, I would say that you're best going out to traditional stores around about an hour and making something for your family. I'm a big fan of producing large quantities of origami, for example, butterflies. What says you love someone more than crafting 100 custom origami butterflies and placing them inside a fish net and sort of hanging it from the ceiling? I can't think of anything. Many origami butterflies hanging from the ceiling. Odd decoration.
Fort Worth, Austin. May your days be sunny and bright. May your hearts be happy and light. Merry Texas Christmas.
The clean canteen. It's a delightful metal water bottle.
Merry Texas Christmas, you all.
I gotta admit, it's a bit loud when you undo it.
And what is this clean canteen made out of?
It's made out of stainless steel. It is good for the environment. It helps reduce plastic waste.
What's its color?
It's steel. It's chrome. It's metallic. It is shiny. It is sleek for the modern era.
Oh, man. Isn't it nice to have a chrome comfort in this modern society?
Indeed. So I'd say you're pretty much 50-50 split in terms of getting your loved ones 100 origami butterflies hung from a fish on the ceiling or a clean canteen. I'd say both are good options.
Again, I would just like to say I apologize for the commercial breaks. It's been a little bit rough on these waters here at the ship. And we are now hopefully back for another 13 minutes before we go on our break and return talking about a subject very near and dear to both Asher and I's hearts,
Yes.
Which we have alluded to many a time already.
Indeed.
So, back on the government, a topic which everyone loves, no one hates, and definitely doesn't bring up bad images to any listener's minds.
Of course. So, my time in the government has been brief, I've mentioned this, but I have gotten a good understanding of how we structure the org in terms of just attending meetings during my candidacy. And I'd say one of the most important things you as a student can do in order to make sure that the student government is serving you well is to come to them with your concerns. When it comes to changing things in life, you need to make sure that you're contacting the right people, the people with the power. Those are the people that you complain to if you're the squeaky wheel and actually get the grease. So we are moving our General Assembly meetings into the room behind the bookstore, actually. The same place that the German Christmas market will be happening Monday, that's right, from the hours of 11 to 3. But nevertheless, our General Assembly meetings will be moved there. They happen every Monday at the sharp time of 1:05 and normally run from about 1:20 to 1:40. But you can come there as an individual, any student, and come and give campus feedback on what you think should be improved, and we urge you to do so.
In addition, I've also heard that when you go to these meetings, you can make requests on behalf of your org, if I am understanding it correctly. So it's a great way for any org leaders in the call or people that might want to start an org to go and actually see how the student government is run. So it might be an easier process to create your org or better let the stand the state of the org so they can help you, especially senators like Asher, who would greatly appreciate knowing how each org is doing so they can provide feedback.
Yes, we do a lot of that. We, I believe, approve org constitutions. The wonderful member, Nathan, who looks through them. And I'm sure that if you're looking to make an org, he would be willing to give you tips on writing your org constitution, just so you know it comes through properly.
As we're nearing the end of this segment, when or if any, when do you plan to make a move in student government? Do you, if any, let me just preface this. And by make a move, I mean, are you going to reach out and become a committee head? Like, I know Nate Johnson refused the constitutions, or are you going to go for presidency or anything like that in the future? Do you have any ambitions down the line that you can talk about?
I could definitely see myself fitting into a position like that, but it's gonna take some time for me to get used to how the committees function before I decide which one I'd go for, because I'm gonna need to get used to the members and then get used to how they act and see how they run their organizations. In my campaign, I did speak on the Food Concerns Committee, and I would be interested in getting into that, perhaps the head of that someday. But for now, I think I'm going to do a little window shopping in terms of where I think I'm most interested and where I'd be most passionate to enact change on campus.
And what can you say about the food committee? I know that for the viewers at home that are just listening, Mitch Hendricks, the former senator himself, suggested that Asher ask Senator Owen, who is the current head of the food committee for student government, about either participating or being a representative there. Do you know about the food council meetings at all? Have you ever attended one with
ABC?
For now,
I've only been part of the General Assembly because I had not yet been sort of approved. But at next week's meeting, when I can begin essentially working my way into the structure, I will definitely, definitely contact Senator Owen and see what I can do in terms of food concerns.
So, on the topic of food concerns, it is the year 2021 for anyone listening to this in the future, and we at MSOE have had a, to put it bluntly, rough year when it comes to food. Would you like to speak to that, and specifically why you brought that up as a major issue in your campaigning?
Well, I've only been here for one quarter and a couple weeks. So I cannot speak to the entirety of MSOE Food Service. And I have very limited relationships with the wonderful boys and girls who do the work in the cafeteria. I am not entirely familiar with their lives, what's going on, how they like to run the area. Most of my perspective is as a student, as a quiet observer, seeing how things progress. And I've seen a lot of changes. Now, they may be changes that are not extreme to someone with a broader context in terms of the food. But I would definitely agree that even though I've seen significant improvements in the cafeteria food options and quality, that students continue to say that the cafeteria is bad, and not in the right directions, mind you. If they say the cafeteria food is bad, they're complaining to another student, or perhaps someone they think that can help, but really can't. I want to make sure that students know where to go when they have these concerns, which I would say would be to talk to the manager.
You can't help someone in the future.
Indeed. If you have a concern, you got to go to the right people. That's why a part of my campaign was opening up dialogue between ADC and the students.
Former Senator Mitch and current Residents Housing Association food man, as he likes to call himself, would also like to say that the current general manager, Brad, does have things in store that you can look forward to in the future, or maybe have already arrived if you're listening to this later on. And have you also heard, as a freshman, I want your perspective on this, have you heard sophomores and older say the cafeteria used to be better?
I've actually heard a lot of the opposite, personally. Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of people say the cafeteria was worse and it's gotten better. I've had one girl tell me that last year, during the brief time she was here, she survived on nothing but blue Gatorade because she so detested the cafeteria food. Mm-hmm. But I see her go there for breakfast now, so evidently something's improved.
Oh, we're going to go to an early commercial now and probably ride it through to a break. So this has been the first half. See you in a bit. MS Alicia, how can I help you?
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
Why?
Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list.
No, he's not.
Santa's nope, no canceled. List.
Santa is not coming to town. I won't
Dang.
Allow it.
Oh, no. Okay,
I canceled Santa, Asher. He's Dang. Gone. He'll never be coming back.
He said something controversial on Twitter.
It's all those elves. He underpays his elf workers. That's why he's been canceled. That was started trying to jump out of his factory, and he put up nets to catch him. So they canceled Santa, Asher. They canceled
oh, no.
Santa.
But however will we find our holiday cheer this wonderful season?
Well, I missed that last part. I missed your last word.
I said, however will we find our holiday cheer this wonderful season?
Oh, you can find your wonderful holiday charm by going to the Christmas market that is being held behind the CC from, sorry, not behind the CC, behind the bookstore on the third story of the CC from 1 to 3.
11
Isn't
to 3.
Isn't that right?
11 to 3, but yeah, go
11
there.
11 to 3. Well, it still is being held between 1 and 3, but extended hours, better news, more spirit, Santa's canceled, go to the Christmas market. Learn about your German heritage.
You can. You can try your very best. My name's Sprigler. There's probably something there.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to Smooth Sailing on WJEB Radio 101.1 FM. I am here with Asher himself, and we are going to talk about Mage, something we alluded to in our segment about government. Now,
yes.
We're both a part of Mage, and I believe you actually were interested in the organization before you even attended MSUE. Am I wrong?
This is very correct. I just answer the question
okay.
before
yeah,
it's even
yeah,
asked. Yeah, come on. Who even needs you, Jackson? No, okay, I need
well,
you. Please. Okay.
I want to leave you, Asher.
No. Okay, so I learned about Mage from a friend of mine, Daniel Atkinson. You may know him as the D&D chair of Mage, and among other wonderful things. He and I grew up in the same hometown. We played role-playing games together through most of my high school career, even though he graduated my freshman year. And that's actually how I learned about MSOE as well, but that's not the point of this story. The point of this story is I was looking for something to do in college, and I knew that Danny was part of Mage, so I said to myself, wow, an opportunity for friends who share common interests with someone who I share common interests with? I'd be insane to pass that up. So he led me to the Mage Corner, and ever since I've just been hanging out with the wonderful, talented, and amiable people of Mage.
And for those listening that don't know where the Mage Corner is, it is in the back corner of what they call the game room. That's the one with the giant red stripe and the nice, in air quotes, carpet and the black round tables. For now, at least, they change furniture in there very often, as the Mage Corner very much knows. If you go to the back corner of that room, where a bunch of couches and other assorted furniture surround a flat screen TV, you can sit with us while we eat meals and talk about things such as Art and Design Club and other things that a lot of us are part in.
Yes. We talk about all our mage events. We have our Friday night gaming every Friday night. Ground floor of the CC. Come on by. We got board games galore. A whole bunch.
We have a giant box of them. We call it the Ark. At least I do.
Yes. We keep it safe. And as well, Wednesday nights is the place to be on CC47, because you know what that is, Jackson?
Oh, what could it possibly be?
It's the chess event, as it's colloquially called, but some people call it chess night, where our wonderful chess chair, Michael Christie, hosts an event full of Oreos and Dots pretzels normally, but also chess.
CC47, yeah. You said?
That's my best guess. It could be somewhere else that recently changed.
And CC46.
46, take it back, it's 46.
And CC46.
Look, it just changed
after?
There. It's on the ground floor of the CC in the what I like to call the Cake'em Combs, which is the delightful maze that they keep for all of our civil engineering, architectural engineering, construction management students. But if you go or use the back elevators, you come out of there, you turn right, and then you go and you turn left, and then it's the first one that shows up on your left. So that is the delightful chess room, I will repeat. You take the back elevators in the CC, mm-hmm. not the front ones. And then you leave into the ground floor, you take a right, and then you take the next left, and then the first door to appear on your left will be the chess room. That's right. Left. Left. Chess.
You heard it here first, folks. Left. Left. Chess, as they say.
Right. Left. Left. Chess. Yes.
Right. Left. Left.
We can never let Michael hear this broadcast.
It's a good thing he sings a circus tonight.
Yes.
Quite literally. Continuing on. Friday night gaming occurs in Beats Tower 166 usually, but if an event goes on where that room's occupied, 168 is also where it can be found.
Yeah,
and
I'd say it's a blast.
Yeah. What's your favorite game that shows up at Friday Night Gaming?
Well, I'm a big fan of games that are mm-hmm. sort of like number-based, like where you can make the numbers go up and have fun. So Munchkin is always a blast, I'd say. But if I had to make any other recommendations, something like Catan, or Catan, if you will, is also a blast. It's a lot of fun. We have something for everyone. So even if you're more like a Hidden Roll person, we have plenty of Hidden Roll games. Deception mm-hmm. Murder in Hong Kong is occasionally there. But other than that...
Sorry to interrupt, but a question in chat. Mitch is asking if they have Dots pretzels at chess. We can confirm they do often have Dots pretzels at chess.
Mitch, the two staples for chess are vanilla Oreos and Dots pretzels.
That's okay if you don't play chess. We already have a member at chess that never plays chess. So it's very common for that to happen.
Yes. Play chess if you want. If not, hang out. Bring friends that like to play chess. We have people that play chess. We have some people who are getting pretty good at chess, but need to broaden their horizons in terms of chess playing. So if you think you can beat us, you're probably right, but come here and prove it anyway.
What do you mean, broaden your horizons in terms of chess?
Well, we've been playing each other for, like, a quarter. We need to play new people so we can learn new strategies and improve. And while you can do that on the internet, it's not quite the same as having a real board in front of you.
How long has chess been running at MSOE? Because my freshman year, it was not around.
Well, the best thing I can say in terms of that regard was I've only been here since the beginning of the year, mm-hmm. and I remember chess being there, so I can tell you at least a quarter in a couple weeks.
It's been
around for longer than that.
Okay, so, we had an interjection from Jershey, but it's been around longer.
It seems as if Mage did a lot of rebuilding this year, especially with Friday Night Gaming, which made its return, and Chess, which also made its return, and Anna Mondays,
yeah,
which has made its return, and where people can go to watch shows that are not always anime, but are generally themed around it.
Mm-hmm. I never personally attend, but I could recommend it for those who are interested.
And that is also held in Beats 168 on Mondays, of course.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite thing about Mage from your short time at MSO? If you have a fond memory...
I'd say that my fondest memory was Halloween. I dressed up as the Kamen Rider. For mm-hmm. anyone that saw me, it was a delightful costume. But I would personally make the point that it would have been impossible without quite a lot of people in Mage. I can speak to at least a few of the chairs and board members. Jess provided me an adhesive without which I would have not been able to effectively secure the things on my belt. D provided a trip to Menards that garnered me a can of silver spray paint that I used to spray the buckle on the belt. I cannot thank Zoe Rush enough for the supplies that she was able to lend me from Art and Design Club. I think RJ and Danny were just my pit crew, because putting my gloves on and taking them off was a bit difficult with my costume, and they let me sort of hang around the Mage trunk or treat area, which was very, very nice of them. So if there's one thing to be taken away from that, I would see Mage as a wonderful place to come and make friends who are willing to help you do all the crazy things that you want to do with your life and really that bring you happiness.
And if you want to join Mage, you can attend. Oh, Mitch just asked a question. Did you save, quote, the big money?
Well, D did that for me, so I think that I handed him an Altides container with like $6 in quarters, and I think I got at least $1 in quarters plus some extra change back in the Altides container, so I'd say big money was essentially saved.
And would you like to explain what the Kamen Rider is?
It's a great television show that was made back in the 70s and continued to this day. It's Japanese. Essentially, a grasshopper cyborg guy goes and fights the post-Nazi Nazis. Yeah. No morally gray plots. He's always the hero. The Nazis are always the bad guys.
That's a very apt description of the show. Getting back on topic, getting back to Danny in specific, I am in his current Dungeons & Dragons game, and I know you also know quite a bit about the system. Was it Danny who introduced you?
Well, that is an interesting thing to say. I believe Danny was someone who introduced me to my first DM, which was a person back in my hometown of Geneva, Illinois. But Danny, I think the first game I played with him was Mutants and Masterminds, which was a delightful superhero-themed RPG. But currently, I do play in his Sunday campaigns. So, I'm still playing with Danny to this day. We've been playing role-playing games together for over 4 years, and I've loved every second of it, personally.
You mentioned Mutants and Masterminds. Danny's told me slightly about the system. Were you in the game with the Magic School Bus? Does this ring a bell?
Can't say I was.
Any game that... Does Mr. or Dr. B's come to mind?
I was able to escape. I was not in the Dr. B's campaign, I'll tell you that much. I would have remembered if I was in the Dr. B's campaign. I was not.
Though you've heard of it.
Oh, of course. I've heard of the delightful YouTube animation and also Danny's post-YouTube animation character.
What do you know anything specific about the campaign that you can elaborate on, like third party from an outsider's perspective?
About the Mutants and Masterminds campaign with Dr. B's?
With Dr. B's, yep.
I can't say I do, I'm afraid. I only played in a couple of Danny's Mutants and Masterminds D&D campaigns, once as the doorman, and once as a sort of strange sort of like post-midlife crisis actor who got illusion powers.
Mm-hmm.
So neither of the times was I with Dr. Beast, nor have I heard anything about Dr. Beast.
We have a question coming in. Does Danny use the Thursday, now Tuesday, game as a bad example? I don't know what this means.
I mean, I know what it means. So I'm part of Danny's Sunday game, which, I mean, if somebody has to say it, is clearly the superior Danny campaign. Come on, guys, we were all thinking it. But nevertheless, the Tuesday campaign is not necessarily a bad example. It's just a different example. You guys play a lot more fast and loose than a lot of his other campaigns, from what I've heard. But you guys create a lot of really good stories. So when it comes down to it, I wouldn't say you're a bad example at all. I'd say you're a really good example of the one way to run a Dungeons & Dragons campaign, because I don't think there's one true right way. I think you guys are, if nothing else, a paradigm of your sort of class.
What do you mean by a certain class? Can you tell me what that means from like a game design perspective?
So,
or when you're designing a campaign, like, what would you mean? Like, what can you target a class? Like,
I'd say there's a lot
what
more.
What does that entail?
From what I've heard of the Tuesday campaign, it's a lot more freeform in terms of players being more open to just randomly breaking the story. From the one great story I've heard. But nevertheless, I'd say that it's probably not all that much different from mine. Mm-hmm. I don't have the full story, but if I could define the classes, one has a lot more like desire to expand in the player interest, and the other wants to still control the story, but as a collaborative member who's playing along with the GM's discretion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say any campaign can have a mix of those two. It's just based on the players you have. And that is my incredibly limited experience hearing about these two campaigns and as well hosting one temporarily in high school.
And when did you start playing D&D for the first time?
I would place that earlier in my high school career, sophomore
mm-hmm.
year. I'd say was when I really started to get into Dungeons & Dragons. As I said, I started with Mutants and Masterminds, but even further back in my middle school career, I created my own role-playing system called Ashers & Dragons, which is
really?
It's a story I have not told in a long time. But it was...
please go on, because I did something very similar in middle school, and it was quite the story, so please, go first. Do tell.
It was played with a 2 6-sided dice for rolling, and essentially there was almost no rules and regulations. You had stats that you allocated in the beginning. There was, of course, strength, speed, library usage, all the normal skills you'd find in a role-playing game. But essentially, you'd just do things and they'd happen. It was like a children's playground of the imagination. It was delightful. I played it at a pool, and then, I think, in my kitchen, and then never again. But it was very, very, very freeform.
I, myself, also had a system that was very, very freeform that didn't have a name when we were playing it, but has since been called the 5-point system, where anyone playing it could name a skill and either assign it a point value between 1 and 5, and you would also have to take a detrimental skill to your character between 1 and 5 to balance it out. And these could be anything you could think of.
Okay, now in this case, I think you're thinking too strict here. Ashers and Dragons was a system where literally one of the skill checks was you had to do karaoke. And it was delightful in terms of that regard. It was a lot more freeform than yours, which definitely seems to have more of a structure to it. Although I do massively enjoy it and hope you one day invite me to play in a campaign based on that.
Passengers? Okay, let me get an ETA. 601? We have one passenger at Metro that needs to get to Broman Towers. ETA. He'll be there in 5 minutes. No problem. Have a good night. Bye. Hope. I apologize once again if you caught any of that or all of it.
It's all good. Yeah. It's smooth sailing. There's got to be a couple bumps along the way, or else the ironic name doesn't work.
Yes, indeed. Oh, Mitch said, any percent speedrun to breaking the 5-point system. Mitch, you hold that world record already, so you don't have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
So, are you into game design? What do you think of it? Like, it sounds like, even spinning back to middle school, you've been designing your own systems of sort, or your own game. Like,
yeah.
Where does this really span back for you? Like, where does this come from?
So, if nothing else, it comes from a delightful thing that I did in elementary school. It was called Castle Wars, which has a sort of generic game-esque thing to it, but it was very much the child says... It's like the opening to Toy Story 3. Have you ever seen the opening of Toy Story 3, Jackson?
Yes, I have, where it goes into a cinematic montage as if it was a real Old West event with the toys actually behaving how they would if they had their actual powers, if they were real.
Well, in the intro to Toy Story 3, there's like the, I have a force field dog. Well, I have a dinosaur that eats force field dogs.
Yes.
You know? It was essentially that, but on paper, where it would be like, well, I've generated 100 troops to go and attack you, and then the other person would say, well, I have defenses to defeat 100 troops. And you'd essentially just keep one-upping each other, and it built, like, these massive fortresses where you'd slowly, like, be able to build and resist and develop your own tech, and we'd steal stuff from pop culture all the time. But essentially, it was just a bunch of kids messing around with things that they liked to imagine and pitting them against each other, and that sort of, like, spirit, I'd say, is what led me to, once I discovered there were rules to these things, start creating games, which is why I took my game design independent study senior year of high school, which was a delightful experience in terms of doing way more writing on walking simulators, and by that I mean visual novel games or sort of narrative exploration games, that's the term. Way more writing on narrative exploration games than I ever thought I'd have to do. But it was an experience that also taught me a lot of C# coding in Unity, so I can definitely take that away. I made a game called Maze Mart, which is essentially an infinitely expansive shopping mart maze where you win by collecting all of the products that you need that randomly spawn on the shelves. It was supposed to be a horror game, but there was never any horror element, so it was just kind of a quiet game where you walked around a maze and picked up supermarket items. Yeah,
so
good times.
obviously you just gave us the highlights reel of that class, but how did that class come to be at your high school? Was it like a recently developed class, or was it something that had been existing, and who taught it? Like, how does something like this come into existence? Because MSUE has a similar class, but it hasn't been run for years because they don't have someone that's qualified enough to really teach it professionally.
Well, we didn't have that at my high school either. So if you take the note of, I want this to happen, and I'm not too sure if we have the faculty for it, I would recommend just pursuing an independent study like I did. I didn't take a course as in, like, traditional open up the book. I talked to the administration, and I took two independent studies that year, one in game design, the other in electronics technology, and they just said, well, we've looked at your academic record, you have lots of good teacher references, go ahead, go wild. And I'm not too sure how the independent study sort of process works here, but I'm sure it's at least somewhat similar.
I honestly can't speak because I, like I said, it hasn't been run for years.
But yeah, if you're interested in something like that, I'd say find a professor who you think would at least endorse you for something and maybe try and get it as a course. Or if not, do it in your free time. Game Dev Club meets Mondays at the times of 6 to 7 in various different rooms inside of Dirk's Hall. I'd check the Society of Software Engineers Discord to make sure you have the most recent one. But that's where I'd go if you want to find people who share the interest in game design. I would go to Game Dev Club right there in Dirk's Hall, 6 to 7 on Mondays.
The first thing that comes to mind is, one, Game Dev Club exists? I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of clubs on this campus that don't get the most exposure, but it's a very small one. I'd say 5, 6, 7 members tops any given day. But it's a lot of fun. Basically, people come and show off their projects, and you can talk to people about what they've done and learn from them, and form project teams. It's a really underrepresented portion of the Society of Software Engineers, but I definitely recommend checking it out.
Sorry about that. But yes. I might actually have to show up to this org now that you've told me about it.
Indeed.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Uh-oh, this isn't good. Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Jackson. Can Jackson hear me? Find out on the next episode of Smooth Sailing.
We might legitimately have to do that because, I think I am talking into my, okay, let me back up a bit. I am, of course, sailing my ship, right? I don't have a lot of wiggle room for large recording equipment, and I currently use a wireless microphone to do this broadcast,
okay,
which has died. So I'm holding you up on my pirate phone to my ear and talking into you right now.
Delightful. The onboard radio equipment is broken, and you've resorted to your like 90s brick phone, but it's like made out of wood and has like brass dots on it because it's like a ship phone.
I'm pondering my orb. I'm a pirate wizard.
Pirate wizard pondering his smooth sailing orb.
My sea orb.
Your sea orb. Your sorb. Well.
So.
We're about to get to the printer repair segment, too. That was going to be my favorite one.
If you would like to go off on a printer repair rant while I try and get this working, go right for it.
Okay, so welcome, WJB Radio 101.1 FM, Milwaukee's finest country music radio. I am here to tell you, that's right, you, how to properly fix issues with the printers on the Milwaukee School of Engineering University campus. This may or may not affect you. If it does, great. You're going to have a lot easier life. If it doesn't, well, if nothing else, if somebody who it does affect needs help from you, you can help them. So, a big error these days is follow you printing, not actually sending your documents. I'm sure if there's a student listening to this, they have had that problem at least once or twice. So, in this case, there is a guide on the MSOE Help Desk Solutions site. If you are looking for the solutions site, I recommend you go to msoehelpdesk.com and you click on the link that will lead you to our Fresh Service page. From there, you can find various solutions for different errors and also among them, the Follow You Printing Driver Fix. I will now provide you an over-air rendition of the MSOE Follow You Printing Driver Fix in my favorite terminology. So, you're going to want to go to Devices and Printers, or Printers and Scanners, if you are so inclined. And on Printers and Scanners, you're going to find a printer called Follow You Printing on PrintProd 01, or as we call it in the biz, PrintProd 1. And you're going to want to delete that printer. And I know this sounds counterintuitive, but bear with me. It will disappear off of your list of printers. Now, you may be concerned. You may say, Asher, Ultimate Printer Repair Boy, you just made me delete the printer that I'm having trouble with. How is this going to help me? To which I would say, thank you for using my full title, and would tell you to go to your command line, at which point you'd type in gpupdate, that is gpupdate if you want it all as one word, or if you want it spelled out like most people, it is gpupdate. That's right, gpupdate. At which point, it will run a group policy update on your computer. This may take a minute or two, but don't worry, it's going to be worth it. I trust that you can spend more than a minute or 2 minutes doing something other than what you're trying to do, or just freaking out about the assignment you have to turn in that you're desperately trying to print. After about a minute or two, a printer should reappear in your queue, and that's right, it's Follow You Printing on PrintProd 01, or as we say in the biz, PrintProd 1. And now you should be able to successfully print to any Follow You Printer on campus, excluding, of course, the one that is broken right now inside of the math department, unless they fixed it, which would be very, very nice. If you are in need of printer paper in the science building, I would direct your attention to the EECS Technical Support Center. Their cabinets are filled with various reams of paper that support the 8x11 standard, which goes into most of the printers on campus. They have way too much of it, and honestly, they can probably lend you a ream or two. I do it on my printer repair shifts if I've run out of paper. Anyway, so that's basically the rules. How do I add the Follow You printers to the personal PC? Very, very good question. So this has been a topic of discussion among many different members of the various IT crowd, as we call them. I'm afraid that if you're on Mac OS, you're going to have some trouble. So if you're of course, there's a stock of printer paper in the math department office, but we don't want you to go into the math department office. EECS Technical Support already deals with students. And they're like, if you come to them and say, I need printer paper, there are posters on the printers nearby on which they are forced to give you printer paper for various science building printers. Math department is a bit looser, but normally the hallway printer on the third floor of the library is pretty well stocked, and there are currently multiple boxes of reams of paper to the side if you are so inclined as to replace the paper yourself. Has our captain returned to the broadcast?
I indeed have returned to the broadcast.
Okay.
Thank you for telling us so much about how to fix our printer issues, because many people have them, and many people do not know how to fix it, or are even trained on how to fix it.
That's right. The general response is to go to, remember, the MSOE Help Desk website and click on the solution link. Everything you need can be found by searching there. That is my ultimatum in terms of printer repair.
And what will happen if you disobey these orders and go to the actual help desk?
If you go to the actual help desk, someone will still help you, but will be kind of, you know, exasperated because we keep telling people to go to the link. And it's really something that you don't need us for. It's a simple web page that you look at that tells you how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of being exasperated, you mentioned very briefly you had a second tangent you wanted to go on before the show on scheduling. What did you mean about that? What is scheduling to you, or the art of the schedule?
The art of the schedule. I think it's a complicated topic, but I'm a big fan of scheduling everything. If you approach me, which is something you're very welcome to do, I don't want to be an imposing figure ever. So if you see me walking around, sideburns, sort of goofy Ushanka hat this winter.
Leather jacket
with a piece of electrical tape on the right arm where I was stabbed with a badminton racket. Essentially, a good Doc Martens, and ask to see my schedule. I will love nothing more in the world to show you my schedule, but I use a website called dig.shovelapp.io, and it allows me to block schedule most of my classes and activities. And I'd say that scheduling is one of the best ways to deal with a lot of different things at once. And, you know, I'm sort of in a lot of different things at once. I'd say that's a fair approximation of what I do. I could read you off my email signature, but that would really not be something you're interested in. So, nevertheless, if you think you want to do something extra in your life, like fit in an extra club or a personal project, I'd say one of the best ways to make the time to do something regular in your life is to set up a schedule on a website like dig.shovelapp.io, where it is flexible enough to change on the fly, but also strong enough that you will feel motivated to follow it.
Motivated to follow it? How do you get someone to be motivated to follow it when all else fails? Do you have any suggestions?
I'd say you really need to reap the benefits of a schedule before you feel like you can't go back to not following it. And I won't say it works for everyone. People work differently, and I'm not here to say, wait, you don't use a schedule and are still happy? What are you doing? I'm here to say, if you want to try something new, try out scheduling. It might help you fit more into your life and make you happier overall. At least it does for me.
When did you start using schedules? Like, is this something that you decided to really get on because you're going to college and you're stepping it up, or have you always been a schedule guy?
It was probably the COVID pandemic, I'd say, is what brought me into the world of scheduling, because I was a high schooler at the time, and I just sort of got shoved into my room with a computer and was told, do your work. And I did, with a schedule. And it helped me a lot in terms of staying motivated during COVID, which was a widespread concern for a lot of people, especially with online classes being a bit difficult to follow.
For historical record, can you just go on what it was like for your final 2 years of high school not to be in person, to be online during those COVID times in the state of Illinois?
So, the state of Illinois has a lot of different concerns over being in person versus virtual, but I went to a school where we decided it was in our best interest to, for the last half of my junior year, go virtual, but then once we came back for senior year, go back in person, which was very important in terms of teaching me schedule flexibility, I'd say, because the beautiful thing about a schedule is if you get really into it, you get to the point where you think you can schedule everything and become an independent entity, and you control your time. But really, it's about learning to compromise. So, like, when I had to come back to in-person school, I had to start working around other people's schedules and the school schedule. And that's an important thing if you're going to follow a schedule, is that you understand that you are one of many determiners of what you're going to do with your life. And some agency has to be handed over to activities that you ultimately choose to fulfill your goals.
And have you ever had to fall back on any activities to fulfill your goals? Does any circumstance come to mind where that happens?
I would say, when I say sacrifice your agency to something, I would say it's like school. school is essentially, it's a process to better continue in your life, in your career, do what you love, get money, whatever's motivating you to be here at MSOE or any college you're at. And when you sacrifice that time to other people, you have to be able to work that into your schedule. So when I say fall back on something, I say something along the lines of give your time to someone else and work that into your schedule.
A lot of people have a misconception about that, as I'm sure you might know, where they figure by scheduling time or sacrificing time to certain things that they are hurting themselves on an emotional level, if you understand what I mean, and not overall just investing their time so that they can sow the rewards later, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah. If you can take one thing away from my rant on scheduling, it should be this. Optimize your schedule not for productivity, but for happiness. If your schedule is making you unhappy, you should find a way to stop that. I'd say that your happiness comes from a good balance of striving for success and not striving for success. So, for example, maybe you do well in school, you get good grades as a result of the schedule. That makes you happy. That motivates you to do your homework, study, things like that. You find extracurriculars, you give time to them. For example, like a robotics team or an art club. Activities that you deeply enjoy and sink hours into are rewarding to you. And those are things that you block into the schedule every week. School, clubs. Those are important parts of your life. But I'd also say that a lot of scheduling comes from leaving, believe it or not, unscheduled time to spend with your friends, your loved ones. Consume mindless entertainment, eat snacks, do whatever you want to do to step away from society, step away from being told what to do. That's why scheduling is so difficult. It's an impossible, hypocritical balancing act of, yes, I understand my time is better scheduled in some places, but I realize that some people cannot be happy without unscheduled time.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, optimize for happiness.
I'm very grateful you said all of that. So,
yeah.
As we get into the final minutes, I usually like to open this up to any Q&A from anyone listening at home that would like to jump in the call and type out any last questions or general, or anyone that's still listening in the actual call that would like to speak out and ask any last final questions to you, if that's all right.
It's all good. Someone is prefacing a question. Someone saw me play baritone. That's alarming. Mitch, when did you see me play baritone? Okay, Mitch is currently posted in the chat. Mr. Sprigler, I saw you play baritone. Oh, he saw that I do play baritone. He hasn't physically seen me play baritone. That's good. Okay.
Do you play baritone?
I do play the baritone. I have a baritone in my room right over there. I'm pointing at it right now, which you cannot see. But I... Oh, you worked the elevator during move-in and he saw... Yeah, okay, you saw my case. He's not lying.
What
yeah.
does that mean as someone not musically inclined, such as myself?
So... A baritone is a delightful instrument. I like to think of it as a smaller tuba that plays in sort of the range of a trombone. Though I've heard some people call it a weird distorted French horn, I would not agree with those people pretty generally, and I would tell you to disagree with them on that point. But I'd say it has its place as a valuable low brass member. Think of it like a sort of pleasant melodic in-between for the tuba and the trombone that can sort of get into that deeper range, but also has immense capability to play melodic lines.
Well, I think you misunderstood my question slightly, as I was asking, what can you tell me more about the Yamaha YEP-321 case in particular? Is that in reference to the actual...
That was
like
just him seeing me with
playing?
My baritone case, yes.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us anything about your actual baritone? Anything special about it that experts might know about it your specific brand?
I'd honestly need to take it out and look at the documentation. I remember getting it a long time ago. It's been a while since I've caught up on the stats of it. But I'd say it's just your run-of-the-mill average, like, high school student who's taken it seriously baritone. I wouldn't call myself professional level.
And you've been playing since how long have you had the baritones?
So I started out my band career playing the cornet. There was an old man who tried to teach me how to do proper embouchure, and he believed I was going to be a horrible failure at it because I couldn't actually make a note on the cornet when he first gave it to me. And he wasn't entirely wrong because I did not enjoy playing the cornet, and then they switched me on to trumpet. I didn't really like playing the trumpet. And then one day, my band director said, well, we're starting to move into new instruments now that you're in middle school. Here's the baritone. Do you want to play the baritone? And I said, sure, why not? And ever since 7th grade, I have been playing the baritone. I've only had about 3 years of private lessons, though. I was a bit late on that. But nevertheless, I'm a big fan. I definitely enjoy it as a creative outlet. And I'd recommend music as just a general creative outlet for anyone. I've had a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And so we... Do you know of any places where those interested in music could go to learn how to play an instrument?
I would recommend the wonderful, wonderful music programs that have been reestablished in the winter quarter. Mm-hmm. We have a new director of music programs. Lev Ivanov is a delightful gentleman. I've only ever seen him in one informational meeting, but I am sure that he is doing his job very well. I am only in the concert band, so I do not see all of the music programs across campus, but if you're interested in choir, string orchestra, jazz band, there are plenty of ensembles that you can take for credit or not for credit.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Hendricks also comments that the jazz guys play. Well, thank you for... We're going to have to cut the commercial for just a brief second. Be right.
Mm-hmm. So, final commercial of the evening. I would like to thank the Academy, that being the Lego Master Builder Academy, who sent me a lot of little bagged sets when I was a child. I paid hundreds of dollars for the subscription, and by that I mean my parents paid hundreds of dollars, but I never really built the sets. I think I just thought it would be cool to have the bags, to say that I was part of the Lego Master Builder Academy. But nevertheless, seeing those bags in the corner of my room for many of the formative years of my life really shaped me towards believing that someday I could actually execute on something I paid hundreds of dollars for. And, you know, college is just an extrapolated version of the Lego Master Builder Academy if you break it down like that, so... Don't let college be the Lego Master Builder Academy Lego set bag that sits in the corner of your childhood room. Let it be something that you actively engage with. You know, actually learn things from, find joy in. We're not here for a long time. We're here for, hopefully, a spiritually fulfilling time. But how you choose to fulfill your spirit has a wide, wide variety of paths in it. So yeah. I guess, really, the advertisement today was for self-actualization, not really the Master Builder Academy. I don't think it's running anymore. It might be. In terms of Lego, though, they've released a really cool new Marvel set. It has a Blade minifigure in it, if you like Blade. So there's an official Blade minifigure, also Spider-Ham, if you're a big fan of like the pig version of Spider-Man. The Punisher's in it. Spider-Gwen's in it. J. Jonah Jameson's in it. Whole bunch, probably the whole Sinister Six are in it.
Spider Pig is not the antagonist of the Simpsons movie. That would be the President of the United States. Stop spreading false information, Mitch.
Would you like to inform our listeners as to how you came upon that great statement, Jackson? Because it may seem a bit out of the blue for them.
Mr. Hendricks, in our chat, asserted that Spider Pig is the antagonist of the Simpsons movie. This is incorrect. In the Simpsons movie, the President of the United States is indeed the antagonist.
And to that I would say, I would say that Spider Ham is the property I am discussing, not Spider Pig.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, go out and check the Lego holiday calendar. Buy it for all of your loved ones. Not the calendar, things in them. Yeah. I've had a wonderful time here tonight, Jackson. I'm not going to lie. Oh, it's been enlightening.
This has been a wonderful experience. It's been great to have you on, and we would love it if you would come back someday.
I mean, I'm sure I'm only a freshman right now. I'm sure in a couple of years I'll do a whole bunch more and be able to talk about all that.
Well, I'm sure we'll even check in even as soon as next year, possibly.
Yeah.
Maybe the year after. But it has been wonderful having you on, Asher.
Yeah.
This has been Sailing on WKEV Radio FM, Milwaukee's finest classic country music. We will be back next week with another very special guest. But until then, I hope your week goes fine and smooth sailing.
Let the music play on, play on, play on. Everybody sing, everybody dance. Lose yourself in wild romance. We're going to party, caramba, fiesta, forever. Come on and sing along. We're going to party, caramba, fiesta, forever.